Forget inflation. Forget the output gap. Jobs is the whole economic story right now, about which some not bad news from American Public Media. This is Marketplace. In Los Angeles, I'm Kai Ryssdal. It is Thursday today, March the 25th. Good as always to have you along, everybody. We are going to start today by taking our good news where we can get it. This being Thursday, regular listeners among you will know we got news of first-time claims for unemployment benefits this very morning. 657,000 people filed the paperwork last week. Still a whole lot, yes, but well down from last week and the lowest in a year. So that is to be celebrated. More people are getting their shots and more businesses are opening up. But to make a slightly awkward turn to the negative here, that does not mean everything is suddenly all sunshine and light for business owners, you know. As Marketplace's Kristen Schwab reports, for restaurants in particular, hiring is the new hurdle.
Looking for a restaurant job in Chicago? Mario Ponce's been hiring.
So we went from two cooks and a manager to three cooks, a dishwasher, manager, supervisor, bartenders, at least four servers, like overnight.
Ponce owns Taquito, a trio of Latin American restaurants. He called his old staff members to come back, but many of them had left the industry or left Chicago. For the first time ever, he's using a hiring consultant, like hospitality recruiter Patrice Rice.
So we signed a client yesterday. They need 100 managers. I mean, that's how bad it is right now.
Rice works with national brands like Applebee's and Olive Garden, and she says her phone rings every time a state eases restrictions. Even though everyone knew this moment was coming, they couldn't really prepare for it.
Some of these companies have kind of kept their managers warm, but as the dates got pushed back, people could not continue to wait.
Turnover is normal in hospitality, but business owners say this is a different beast. Chad Wagman owns Chesapeake Grill and Deli in Maryland. He says the applicant pool has changed.
I've gotten sophomores and juniors in high school almost exclusively.
He's used to hiring inexperienced workers, but not all at once.
It certainly slows down the kitchen a little bit.
Thankfully, he says customers have been pretty patient. They're probably just happy to eat his crab cakes in person again. I'm Kristen Schwab for Marketplace.
Wall Street on this Thursday, up-ish. We'll have the details when we do the numbers. We've been talking to micro businesses this month, companies that are smaller than small, just a handful of employees, to see how the pandemic has been treating them. Today, we've got Eric Vaughn of Detroit, Michigan, who turned his teenage hobby into a frame shop called Eric's I've Been Framed that he has been running now for more than 20 years. Mr. Vaughn, thanks for coming on.
Thank you very much, and thanks for having me.
Let me ask you, first of all, how's business a year something into this pandemic?
Well, you know, it started off pretty slow. We got shut down and things came to a halt. Since we've been back open, it's been pretty busy getting a lot of people coming in. And we've had to kind of change our way we do business simply because we have people on top of each other. I decided to do appointments.
I wonder if people have been spending the year digging through boxes and mementos and they just decided they wanted stuff to get framed and hang on the walls.
Absolutely. You know, when they do the Zoom calls, they want their backgrounds to look nice. So
<That's>
they frame up their credentials, kids' pictures. And also we've been framing up quite a bit of memorial pictures of loved ones and that have passed and that kind of thing.
Yeah, of course. Of course, makes a lot of sense. Not to make a very awkward turn from a very serious moment, but when this many people come in to get this many things framed, I imagine you only have a certain amount of inventory, right? So how's your supply chain running?
Well, that's another problem. I mean, the whole food chain is kind of, kind of backed up. you know, the distributors. At one point, they were out of a lot of black molding for us to make the picture frames. Mm-hmm. My deliveries have changed. You know, in the past, we were able to turn things around in a week to 10 days. Now it's taken us about 3 weeks, you know, to 4 weeks to get things done because we don't know when pieces are back ordered or what have you.
Yeah. This store is your life's work, basically, right?
Absolutely. You know, I'm a second generation business owner. My father was in business. He had a bookstore, a black bookstore, and all of my siblings, my brother and two sisters, they have businesses. Hmm. We were able to share information in terms of, you know, the PPP and the grant information.
Yeah.
We were able to secure a few of them. And, you know, it was a challenge, but we've been able to make it through and survive.
I guess the reason I asked the question, Mr. Vaughn, is to find out what's going to happen when you're not doing this anymore. Are your kids going to take this job? Are they going to be entrepreneurs too, do you think?
Well, my son is actually scheduled to get a degree in chemical engineering. And he came to me and said, "Dad, I don't want to do this anymore. I think I want to go into business."
Wow.
I'm like, "Oh Lord, another business owner." So he didn't take a liking to the picture frame business, but main thing that I did that I wanted to make sure that my father did was purchase property.
Mm-hmm.
I own my own building.
Oh yeah, that's good.
And that's something. It was easy for me to start this business because I didn't have to go and try to locate a building. You know, he sold me the building. He should have given it to me, but I understand why he did that.
Yeah,
that's what I plan to have for my children.
Yeah,
have something for them to walk into.
Eric Vaughn, the owner, proprietor of Eric's I've Been Framed Shopping Gallery. We got him in Detroit, Michigan. Mr. Vaughn, thanks for your time, sir. I do appreciate it.
Thank you.
Even the most ardent devotee of the Marvel Cinematic Universe will be forgiven for having lost track of when Black Widow, with Scarlett Johansson in the title role, of course, is going to be released. It's been the victim of rolling pandemic postponements since its original premiere date of last May. And now, just as theaters are starting to reopen, Disney says the movie is going to come out in July, both in cinemas and on Disney Plus. So you'll be able to see it on your couch, mask-free, with your own snacks if you want. Yes, indeed, a blow to still-struggling theaters. And as Marketplace's Jasmine Garst reports, a sign of how we are going to be watching movies from now on, most likely.
What are you going to do?
I've lived a lot of lives, but I'm done running from my past.
Below this YouTube trailer for Black Widow, one of the many jokes by frustrated commenters reads, "I'm not entirely convinced this movie actually exists." It does exist, but the mystery is, why is it going to be on both Disney Plus and in theaters? One reason, global COVID vaccinations, or lack thereof. Sean Robbins is an analyst at Box Office Pro.
We still see markets like Europe and Latin America, which are very important, and there's not as much clarity on whether or not those theaters can open up as soon as U.S. theaters now are.
Also, it's about more than just this movie. A Marvel film involves sequels, prequels, spin-off shows, amusement park rides. But most of all, in this case, says NYU's Charles Schrager, it involves the Disney Plus brand, which is still growing.
They are trying to build up Disney Plus. In their head, they're always having Disney to support the rest of their ecosystem. So Black Widow is out there, and it burnishes the Disney brand.
The offer Disney Plus is making could be persuasive. For $30, about the price of two movie tickets, you could just stay home and pop your own popcorn. I'm Jasmine Garst for Marketplace.
This next story comes to us direct from the Marketplace desk of what in the heck were you thinking? Slack, the messaging platform, announced a new feature yesterday called Slack Connect DMs. You, if you're on Slack, could send a direct message to any other user, even if that other user doesn't share what Slack calls a workspace with you. Everybody at the same company, for instance, or a group you've otherwise got to be invited to join. A way to connect people from different workplaces, Slack said. Did not take long, as Marketplace's Erica Barris reports, for the walk back.
When software engineer Marietta Wijaya heard about Slack's new feature, she was like,
Why does anybody think this is a good idea?
Because that kind of connectivity, where anyone can just message anyone else.
I felt like that's just one more way where people could get harassed.
Wijaya tweeted her reservations about it. So did lots of other people. And within hours, Slack got rid of this new ability to send an invitation with a message to any user you're not already connected to. In a statement, Slack says they made a mistake in this initial rollout that is inconsistent with our goals for the product. Anita Williams-Woolley teaches organizational behavior at Carnegie Mellon. She says that Slack responding to critics within a few hours means prolonged beta testing may be a thing of the past.
Some companies might just start putting things out there earlier, recognizing that then they have to be responsive.
And about being responsive, Slack's new feature, and error, came at a time when many homebound employees have been using the platform as their connection to their workplace. Samuel Mayer, who runs the Harvard Music Lab, was worried that a whole lot more of this would mean another distraction for his team. Plus, there's already a way for others to get in touch.
Email is really for the outside stuff, and Slack is for the inside stuff.
And for now, it might stay that way. I'm Erica Barris for Marketplace.
Also, you got to silence those notifications. I mean, you just do. All right, coming up.
Everyone's scrambling to try to figure everything out.
Yeah, kind of the theme of this pandemic, don't you think? First, though, let's do the numbers. Dow Industrial is up 199 today, 0.6%, 32,619. The NASDAQ found 15 points in the couch cushions, about a 0.1%, 12,977. The S&P 500 rose 20 points, a 0.5%, 3909 there. Slack Technologies channeled down 0.9% after its now you can ping anybody. Wait, no, you really can't. Reversal, Erica was just telling us about. Kristen talked about the challenge for restaurants trying to hire staff to meet anticipated demand. So today, Darden Restaurants, the owner of big chains like Olive Garden and Longhorn Steakhouse, posted quarterly financial results. Investors ate it up, you might say. Darden up more than 8% today. Brinker International, the parent company of Chili's, come on, ate it up. That was pretty good. Heated up more than 5.5% today. Bonds down, yield on the 10-year T-note up to 1.62%. You're listening to Marketplace. This is Marketplace. I'm Kai Rizdahl. Some of the world's biggest brands, Nike and Adidas and H&M among them, find themselves suddenly unpopular in the biggest market in the world. The companies are distancing themselves from Chinese suppliers that are suspected of using forced labor. Muslims in Western China, the Uyghurs, of course. And today, Chinese public officials and pop stars and social media influencers are going after those international brands and others calling for boycotts. Still, though, as Marketplace's Scott Tong reports, pressure from human rights groups and Western governments does have multinationals scrambling to scrub their supply chains.
Ruxian Abbas left Western China in 1989, the year of the Tiananmen crackdown. And since then, she's advocated for human rights.
I'm the founder and the executive director of Campaign for Uyghurs.
When I met Abbas this week at a strip mall outside Washington, where she lives, she said millions of Uyghurs have been forced into indoctrination camps. And now, many are forced to work in Chinese factories and cotton fields.
The Uyghur slaves are picking cottons in 21st century.
She mentioned her sister, Dr. Gulshan Abbas, who is among the detained.
You know, it's a beautiful day here today. So, is she taken to the field to pick cotton?
Abbas says in 2018, she spoke out about Uyghur abuses. 6 days later, her sister was detained. For years, Abbas demanded that multinational companies end any business linked to Western China or Uyghur labor. It's now working, says China scholar James Liebold at the Australian Strategic Policy Institute.
It's been a massive wake-up call for multinational corporations, and there's been a lot going on behind the scenes.
Liebold co-wrote a report last year naming 82 brands allegedly benefiting from abuse. Internet companies, car makers, electronics, sneakers, you name it. The report said some 80,000 Uyghurs were transferred to factories across China.
There are a range of middlemen, companies that essentially trade in Uyghur workers, literally a price per head.
The Trump and Biden administrations have accused Beijing of committing genocide against Uyghurs and blocked imports of products believed to be made with illegal labor. All this means reputational risk to brands like Costco. In 2019, the AP reported that a Chinese factory making pajamas for Costco used forced Uyghur labor. Costco denied its products were inappropriately sourced, but later pulled the items off the shelves. Scott Nova is with the Worker Rights Consortium.
This illustrates a complete failure on the part of Costco and is indicative of the see no evil, hear no evil, speak no evil attitude that major brands and retailers brought to this issue.
Costco declined our request for comment. And last week, Bloomberg reported that Apple stopped buying from a Chinese supplier on a U.S. blacklist. We've asked Apple for comment, too. Nate Herman, a lobbyist at the American Apparel and Footwear Association, says media stories have pushed companies to respond.
Many feel that they've gone all the way back and can be sure that they have nothing in their supply chain. Others are still going through the process.
It's challenging, though. The Chinese province of Xinjiang, where most Uyghurs are from, produces 20% of the world's cotton.
If you have long staple cotton from the United States or from Xinjiang or Pakistan or Australia, it can easily all be mixed together.
And China is a hard place to audit factories, says Ryan Aharon of Verisk Maplecroft, a risk advisory.
We've heard cases where maybe factory owners have been tipped off that there's going to be an audit, so they make sure that certain workers come in that day.
Still, some brands have already stopped buying cotton from Western China, including the clothing chain H&M. That prompted Chinese shopping sites to remove H&M products and several Chinese actors to stop endorsing the brand. Analysts say other brands are scrubbing their supply chains more quietly. I'm Scott Tong for Marketplace.
We talked real quick about the unemployment claims numbers from this morning up at the top of the show just a little bit. Better, but people are still losing jobs in this economy at a staggering rate. And a whole lot of things happen, of course, when that happens. There's the stress and the hit to self-esteem and then financial security. Suddenly you can't buy the same things or do the same things as you used to be able to. And that brings us to a family living outside Austin, Texas, trying to find a way to get by after a pandemic job loss. Marketplace's Mariel Segarra has today's installment of our series, How We Shop.
When that big winter storm hit Texas last month, Cecilia Linton and her family couldn't leave their neighborhood for 4 days. The power switch on and off. And as they sat there in the dark,
I was thinking to myself, this could be a good thing because we can't leave the house and so we can't spend any money.
But then she was like, oh, the electric bill. It could be astronomical because of the surge in demand. So she went online and canceled their automatic payment.
We couldn't have them try to auto-withdraw thousands of dollars.
These are the kind of things that Cecilia didn't have to think about a year ago. At the time, she was making $180,000 a year in her marketing job at a law firm, enough that her husband Michael could be a stay-at-home dad to their three teenagers. But in March 2020, she got laid off for the first time ever.
I was just like, okay, so was it me? Was it? And they were like, this is the decision of the executive committee. And I was like, all right, well, there you go. That's that.
She remembers breaking the news to her mom.
She cried, like on the phone, you know, she was crying. And I was like, Mom, I was like, I'm not worried. You know, I've been in this industry for a long time. I was like, I can get a job.
But it was much harder than she thought. No one was hiring.
You can't help but have a hit to your self-esteem. You know, I used to, people would ask me, you know, like, well, how'd you know that? Or how'd you do? And I just, well, because I'm fabulous, you know? And I'm like, oh God, it's been so long since I've been fabulous.
Eventually, she cobbled together some consulting work, and Michael got a $15 an hour job as a janitor at the local junior high school. Together, they make about $60,000, a third of her old salary. Cecilia used to make enough money that when her kids wanted something, like a new PlayStation, she could say, yeah, sure.
And instead, you're now like the gatekeeper to the money.
Because they couldn't keep living the same way. They were spending more than they made and burning through their savings. She wasn't even sure where the money was going. So she made a spreadsheet of every single thing her family spends money on, broken into categories like groceries, auto, and miscellaneous.
I don't know what exactly to call it when you buy plain scotch tape at Ace Hardware.
What she found made her head spin. $171 a month on DirecTV, $800 on groceries, $300 at restaurants, and so many subscriptions. Disney Plus, Hulu, Netflix, YouTube Premium, Audible, Spotify, and Apple Music. Even a $7.99 subscription for the video game Minecraft, which her boys must have asked for.
Part of me wants to slap myself for the amount of money we had been wasting before this all happened.
So they made cuts, canceled some subscriptions, basically stopped getting takeout, switched to cheaper car insurance, and started jumping on sales. The other morning, when she and Michael sat down over coffee,
he let me know that I needed to go to the store because there was a sale on pork that he thinks will change over tomorrow. And did we have enough money for that? These are the things that we have to discuss these days.
It brings her back to her childhood. Her parents were often just scraping by.
Like, as a kid, you don't realize, like, why are we having spaghetti again? And why are we having only rice and beans for dinner? As you get older, you realize some of the things that they were doing so that we could make ends meet till the end of the month.
These days, her mom is doing a lot better financially and has been slipping her $20 here and there for gas or dinner. Makes her feel like a teenager. Meanwhile, her own teenagers are learning the value of money. Her sons, who are 16 now, have been picking up odd jobs, mowing lawns, cutting firewood.
You know, we're at that point where if they didn't learn it soon, you know, they were never going to realize that, yeah, you should know where all of your money is going, and you got to make some sacrifices to get the stuff you want.
Cecilia says there are other blessings in this situation. She no longer has to commute an hour each way to work, and she has her own consulting business that she hopes will grow. Would she like to make six figures again? Yeah. At the very least, she'd like to go a few days without looking at her spreadsheet. I'm Marielle Segarra for Marketplace.
There are more stories to be told of how we shop. Do me a favor, tell us yours, would you? You can do that at marketplace.org. You've certainly heard by now, and if not, allow me to give you the good news. The federal tax filing deadline has been extended to May the 17th because pandemic. But spare a thought, perhaps, for all the tax accountants out there. We certainly did for the one that we know, Michael Durant, CPA, one of the 10 people we've been following for our series, The United States of Work.
I will honestly say for me, I was excited because I have a couple of papers due the first week of April. At the same time, it's a lot of unanswered questions. Last year when they extended the deadline, we had these same questions and we came back to them. Well, what about estimated taxes? What about these informational returns? What does this mean for the states? And here it is, less than 30 days, they extend the deadline and everyone's scrambling to try to figure everything out. And it gets frustrating for us as preparers, and I'm sure it's frustrating for the taxpayers. They're sitting there, do I have to pay at 415? I don't want to be late on a deadline. I don't want penalties. Is my state conforming with the federal government? We are in national tax practice and everybody has different rules and regulations. So to give us less than 30 days, not as happy.
This final note on the way out today, the economic math behind the story I just cannot let go of, that container ship stuck in the Suez Canal. Lloyd's List, kind of the granddaddy of global shipping data, figures it this way. Based on what they estimate the cargo to be, Lloyd says the canal's northbound traffic is worth about $5.1 billion a day. Southbound is worth about $4.5 billion a day, which works out to this little traffic jam now going into its third day, holding up something like $400 million an hour of global trade, which is wild. All right, we got to go. Got a little bit squeezed today. Sorry about that. Amir Babawi, Siobhan Brett, John Buckley, Eve Epstein, John Gordon, Rick Carr, and Betsy Streisand are the Marketplace editing staff. I'm Kai Rizdahl. We will see you tomorrow, everybody. This is APM.
All over the country,
we need to improve reading in Wisconsin.
Schools are changing the way they teach reading.
I'm calling for a renewed focus on literacy.
We have gotten this wrong in New York and all across the nation.
And it's happening because of a podcast.
I think your podcast has changed my life.
And I'm going to share this podcast with everyone I meet.
Sold a Story investigates how teaching kids to read went wrong. New episodes of Sold a Story are available now.